This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Greg Bell from the Tacoma News Tribune. And so, Greg, big game coming up. But I guess the interesting part is that the injury list is pretty well cleaned up. We'll see about J.R. Sweezy. I know you probably talked to him. I talked to him. He's going to try to play. Trey Madden being the only one missing, two players missing for the Cowboys. But it looks like both teams kind of go in healthy.
Hi, John. Yeah, for being January and no bye week.
I know.
Regular season in the playoffs. This is as clean a report the Seahawks have had all year, maybe. I think Sweets is going to play. Two lost years in Tampa Bay. He didn't know if he'd ever get back to the playoffs. And here he is. They're going to give him a test pregame. I think they're going to have to crowbar him off the field, personally. I think once he's on there trying to work it out, he's going to, that strained arch, he's going to try to play. I'll see if he can make it through the whole game. And if he can't, then Ethan Postick will play.
Mm-hmm. But that's the one thing. I mean, say what you want. I mean, this is a pretty gutsy group. I know that both Justin Britt played with ankle injuries last year. Dwayne Brown played with ankle injuries. And in the case of, like, Dwayne, he didn't even he obviously the team knew about it, but he didn't really say much about it. And, you know, Sweezy, because I know I went over to him the other day, and I said, how are you? He's like, you know me. I'm going to try to play.
Exactly. He told me the same thing. I'm fine. So if they even give him a green light to get on the field tonight, I think he's going to play. We've seen, though, John, you've seen, this offensive line has to be just so for this offense to work. And when they were mixing and matching and moving three guys around last week and didn't have George Fannin as the extra offensive lineman / tight end, they did not look good. Six sacks allowed, no. Most since week two. When D.J. Fluker hasn't played, I don't know if anyone's noticed this, D.J. Fluker's missed three more prominent games this year, the first 2 weeks, 1 and 2 at Denver and then at Chicago, and then last week. They have about 18 sacks in those three games D.J. Fluker hasn't played. He's a run blocker primarily, but it's just the cohesion, everybody in the right spot, puts Ofeti back outside where he's been better this year. It's very important to me that even if Sweezy doesn't play, it's very important to me, it seems, that Ofeti and Fluker on the right side get back to what the Seahawks have been used to all year.
Yeah, no question about it. How well do you think they will be able to run against this pretty good Dallas Cowboy defense?
Well, they are good up front, and the front seven is Dallas's strength. And they're going to run it. I don't know if they're going to run it for yards, but they're going to run it just like they did in September. I mean, Carson got 100 yards that day, but it took them 32 carries to get it. They averaged 2.9 yards, the Seahawks did, rushing. And I think they're going to run it anyway, whether they are succeeding or not, just to set up the play-action passes later in the game. John, to me, it comes down to both teams are going to try to do the same thing. The Cowboys are going to establish Ezekiel Elliott, the Seahawks with Chris Carson. And whoever's successful doing that early in the game is going to set up their quarterback in the fourth quarter to throw the play-action deep balls. And, yeah, I know they have Amari Cooper, but the Seahawks will take Russell Wilson in a playoff game against Dak Prescott in the fourth quarter if the game is tight.
Yeah, because that's the thing. I mean, I know that Dak has put together some fourth-quarter comebacks, but it's not like the fourth-quarter comebacks of Russell Wilson. I think where the problem is, there's limitations with Dak, because he doesn't get the ball deep. He holds the ball a little bit too long that, he can't overcome two possession scores in the second, if they're down like that in the second quarter. One possession, yeah. He can do that. One score, yeah. But two, I think it's going to be very difficult where Russell can do that.
He can. He has done it. He did it in Carolina. He's done it less this year because they've relied on him to throw less. But you're right. And the big thing, John, playoff experience, it matters. When it's January in the fourth quarter of a tie game or one-score game, the guy who's been to 2 Super Bowls, played in 12 playoff games, won 8 of them, against a guy who has yet to win a playoff game, has only played in 1 of them. The advantage is absolutely to Russell Wilson and the intangibles and the poise and then the belief that his teammates have in him. Brian Schottenheimer talked about it this week about how calm he is in the huddle in those situations, that he has the experience of having done it at the biggest stage. I mean, it's one thing for Dak Prescott to come from behind in the Meadowlands at the end of December against the Giants to win a game they didn't even need anyway. It's quite another to do it in the playoffs. And I think there is a difference. I know it's just a game once they kick it off, but I really do think playoff experience, especially at the quarterback position, becomes pretty important in tight games in the fourth quarter.
But what's amazing in this round of the playoffs with the 12 teams that are in there, Russell Wilson with the 8-4 record is the second most winning quarterback, you know, right behind Tom Brady. Of course, he's won 27, but it's amazing to think that here in 7 years, and he has more playoff wins than Drew Brees, who's 7-6, and he's the second most in the playoffs in what's an interesting matchup with some of the playoff matchups for quarterbacks.
It is, and Pete Carroll talked this week, John, about the experience factor, and he believes that because the Seahawks are so young otherwise, that it does matter that they have Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner and K.J. Wright and Doug Baldwin, guys that Dallas does not have. I mean, Jason Garrett's won, what, one playoff game in his eighth season as a coach in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of intangibles that line up in the Seahawks' favor. Now, they still can't commit 14 penalties for 148 yards. They still can't give up six sacks, and Russell Wilson can't throw red zone interceptions. This team's not built to overcome that, so they still have to play well. The intangibles going into the game, to me, playoff experience being the biggest one, favorite Seattle.
Yeah, I'll tell you the one thing that's going to be interesting now is to look at one factor, which is I call it the Walt Anderson factor, and who's officiating the game. Because, you know, Sean Hockley leads the league with more than 300 penalties and more than 80 holding calls. Well, guess what? Walt Anderson is the second most penalty calling crew, you know, because they average like 17.9 penalties a game with 4.3 holding calls. You know, that could be a negative for Seattle.
Well, here's the deal on that, John. And I did talk to Pete Carroll on the side for Thursday after practice. Remember, in the playoffs, it's an all-star crew. So the numbers are somewhat misleading, because that's Walt Anderson's not going to have his whole crew that threw all those flags. They were second most in the league in defensive pass coverage penalties as well. But he's only going to have his umpire. Carl Paganelli, the umpire on Walt Anderson's crew, Pete Carroll told me will be the umpire tonight. So that's the only member of Anderson's crew that's going to be refereeing this game tonight. So those 17.7 penalties, I mean, Walt Anderson didn't, Carl Paganelli didn't throw every one of those. So the crew stats from the regular season, that's just the referee leading that crew. There's seven other members of that crew, six of whom won't be on the crew tonight. But there's no doubt that Walt Anderson has a reputation in his 17 years as the referee to his crew had thrown more flags. I think just the fact that there are six other guys new to him tonight will mitigate that somewhat.
Well, at least we're both on the same page to check out that stuff to try to figure it out, because I think we saw the games where the penalties were high. That played against Seattle.
Oh, absolutely it matters. And the way they called that San Francisco game and the holding calls and now Ethan Posick's two in the fourth quarter in overtime were definitely two-point takedowns in wrestling. But in general, from week to week, you don't get the same thing. You don't get the same emphasis from officials. Some emphasize defensive contact down the field. Illegal contact 5 yards, such a damaging penalty in the NFL. There, you've seen plays this year, John, where the ball isn't even going to that side of the field, and they still call illegal contact 50 yards away from the play on an incomplete third down pass, and suddenly a team has a first down. There are some crews more predetermined to do that and look for it than others. And the Seahawks, like every team, I think most every team in the NFL that I've been around, they have a book on all these guys. And the Seahawks coaching staff briefs the team and players before each game to say, okay, we've got Walt Anderson, here's his crew, here's how many, the same numbers you and I have, and the tendencies, and they show them film of what they call holding and what they don't think is holding. So they break all this down, and when I talked to Carroll on Thursday about this, he was well aware of the entire situation. Like I said, telling me that Carl Paganelli, the umpire, would be the only member of Anderson's crew there because he checked. And I was checking with him that the All-Star crew still exists in the playoffs. So they are all over this, and it is a factor, and they coach it. And they're definitely the Seahawks have been coached in this for tonight's game.
Yeah, well, that's good because, you got to check out these things. What's your thoughts on Dak Prescott? And clearly, the key to this game is containing Ezekiel Elliott first and then trying to get Dak Prescott uncomfortable.
Exactly, and that's where it starts. In the September 23rd game, as you remember, John, 127 yards for Ezekiel Elliott, but then Dak Prescott couldn't beat the Seahawks defense over the top because he didn't have, he had Beasley and a couple intermediate guys across the middle, but he didn't have the home run threat. They really haven't had since Dez Bryant left. Well, now they do with Amari Cooper. And when Cooper arrived in week eight, it made Dak Prescott a much more efficient and much more dangerous thrower. He's got six games over 70% completion percentage since Cooper has arrived. Cooper's got six of the seven touchdown catches for the Cowboys in the nine games he's played. It's now a different proposition to defend Dallas than it was even in September, because if you do put 8 and 9 in the box like Seattle and most teams have been doing for a couple years against Ezekiel Elliott, well, now they have a guy to go over the top of that. So a guy like Bradley McDougal with strong safety is going to be a little more honest than he was in September when he was pretty much an extra linebacker for most plays trying to defend the run in Ezekiel Elliott. So it's a much more comfortable, confident Dak Prescott, knowing he's got a weapon to blow the doors off the defense that he hasn't had in a couple years. One other factor, John, that people forget about, Ezekiel Elliott does more than run the ball. He's got 77 catches leading the Cowboys. That's more than Amari Cooper's had for the Raiders and Cowboys combined. So they throw it to him as an extended run play out in the flat, not always a screen, sometimes just to get him alone on linebackers and defensive backs. And that's a tough ask to bring that guy down in the open field with the ball. So that's where K.J. Wright becomes important. He wasn't there in week three. He is the rangy, speedy type of guy who can read those plays, can get outside along with Bobby Wagner and stop an Ezekiel Elliott in the open field before he gets going. We saw him last week, Wright, make a play in the backfield that I thought was the fastest he's looked in two or three years. A loss of 5 yards on David Johnson on a screen pass. Those are the kind of plays that they haven't had all season when Wright has missed 11 of 16 games. So not only stopping Elliott in the run tonight, but K.J. Wright and Bobby Wagner outside against Elliott in the pass game is also important for Seattle.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that I think you look at the fact that it was unfortunate that Delano Hill suffered his season-ending injury with the hip. But the fact that I think Bradley McDougal getting back to strong safety for this particular game, I think is important, because I think, you know, Bradley, you know, he and KJ can take away some of those passes that could be that. I mean, you saw when Michael Kendricks came back for the one game before he got his season ending injury, you know, he sealed off some of the stuff that was vulnerable without KJ there. And I think KJ now can seal that off, and having McDougal back at strong as opposed to free, I think this helps him out in this particular matchup a little bit more.
Yeah, it does, John. And I've been writing and saying all year that I think, second to Bobby Wagner, that Bradley McDougal has been the most valuable player on that defense and the best, most consistent player since week one. He's played through tendonite in his knee that he's had for months, yet he makes the plays in the box on the run. He's a sure tackler when guys catch it in front of him. He doesn't let the six-yard pass become 15 or 20 because he tackles immediately. He's had multiple games that he's stopped plays on third down with sure tackles in front of him when quarterbacks check down. That's what a strong safety has to do. And when the Seahawks lost Cam Chancellor last offseason, you're like, oh man, how are they going to replace a strong safety icon like Cam Chancellor? Well, Bradley McDougal has been even better than I think they thought he would be at that role. They always saw him as a cover guy, a tweener between free safety and strong. But to be able to tackle in the run and the pass as surely as he has. And you're right, Tedrick Thompson back to free safety moves Bradley McDougal back to strong safety tonight. And strong safety is a very important defensive position against Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys.
Two other factors for the game that weren't available in the first game against the Dallas Cowboys. You know, having Doug Baldwin, who means so much to Russell Wilson, and then also having Justin Britt, because in that first game against Dallas,
right.
I mean, they had to totally reshuffle the offensive line. That was DJ Fluker's first game. That was J.R. Sweezy's first game at right guard. And then Joey Hunt was at center. And, you know, they gained a little bit over 100 yards, and Chris Carson had his 32 carries and a little over 100 yards. But that really got things started, and having Baldwin added to the mix is important.
It is. On third down, you're going to see how important Doug Baldwin is in the playoffs tonight. First and most third down targets I expect to be Doug Baldwin. Tyler Lockett said last week after the regular season ended, when we asked him about the Dallas game in September, he said, we, quote, found our identity that day. It wasn't exactly the results they wanted. They, as you said, only 2.9 yards of carry in the rush, but they ran it. They were a 73% pass team those first two games, which Denver and Chicago. Russell Wilson was the most sacked quarterback in the league through 2 weeks with 12 sacks. And finally, in the Dallas game, they found themselves and said, this is what we are. We're going to be a running team. I don't care if it's three runs and a punt, which you may see again tonight. We're going to run 10 of our first 12, 14 plays as runs. We're going to set up the play action pass later in the game. That formula worked enough in Dallas to win with some inert Cowboys offense that didn't have Amari Cooper. But then that gave the Seahawks, more importantly, Pete Carroll and his play caller, Brian Schottenheimer, the impetus to keep that approach for the rest of the season. And they've won 10 of 14 games since. And you're right. We go back to what we started this talk about. The offensive line got somewhat solidified without Justin Britt, got solidified that day when Fluker came back. So if Sweezy plays, and I expect him to, then the Seahawks offensive line will be back to where it was for those 3 months that they won 10 of 14 games.
Now, do you think Alex Magoo is going to start and continue to look over and see if he can pick up any of the signs from Chris Richard?
I have a feeling he and Caleb Scott are on the Cowboys' radar today. You might see a bigger poster board in front of Chris Richard signaling or calling in plays. But, yeah, that was a factor in the first game that Doug Baldwin volunteered at a press conference. And they're still talking about that here in Dallas this week. About the Seahawks stealing Rashad. They don't really need to steal Rashad's or Chris Richard's play calls. They know him already. Offensive players this week were talking about how similar Dallas's defense looks to the Rashad calls when he was in Seattle. He hasn't changed anything. He's changed Dallas more than he's changed himself from Seattle, according to the Seahawks offensive players. Chris Carson says it looks like the same defense I've been running against in practice for the last year. So they're very familiar. Because this is the playoffs, because the Cowboys knew they clinched a couple weeks ago, I'm sure Richard's going to have a couple things the Seahawks haven't seen yet. That's part of the NFL.
Yeah, that'll be the interesting part. At what time are you heading over to the game?
I'm enjoying the sun in Fort Worth right now. I'll get over there about 3, 4, probably at 4 o'clock when I get a 7 o'clock local kick.
Yeah, I got to head over. I'm here at the airport right now, so I'll head over at about 2:30, I think. Get there a little bit early.
For those of you back in rainy Seattle, it's 60 degrees, sunny. Kind of wish there wasn't a roof on the place tonight. It's Arlington. It's a beautiful day in Texas.
Absolutely. Greg, looking forward to seeing you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John, as always. See you tonight.
Okay, guest Greg Bell from the News Tribune. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Wheat in Tacoma. Hey, Wheat.
Oh, man, you know, where do we start here, John? My gosh, in July, training camp. Yeah, it's all right now, man. It's on. It's just on. Can I even talk, man? I'm so excited, John. I'm on cloud nine. To be in the playoffs in baseball, basketball, or football, or hockey, or whatever you want to call it, John, there's just a spirit for every team, man, and the fans. It's just, it's a great feeling, John, to have this feeling back. And it, when we weren't in the playoffs last year, it was kind of, you know, what's that stuff, regular day. But it's not a regular day today, John.
No.
Holy mackerel, Darren. And you got to give it up to Jerry Jones, his passion, man. He's always talking, every game he's always talking about something, man. He cares.
Mm-hmm.
He cares about
no doubt.
The team, man. You know, he cares, and that's my kind of people, man. When you care about something, and he cares about his team, he has hatred for losing.
And that's going to be the interesting thing, and I think the thing behind it, because I was really surprised this week, you know, because you figure, okay, the Cowboys got hot down the stretch, Jerry got everything that he wanted in the sense that, you know, he likes Jerry, Jason Garrett, he doesn't want to make any change, and so you figure, okay, so now everything's going to be set from the job, but there's still a contingent of thought out there that Jason could be in trouble if they lose.
You know what I was thinking about too, just on a side note, that stutter Doug Baldwin does.
Yeah.
And it, you know what's so funny? How you know, other sports like baseball, basketball, football, you guys can learn from each other, because I play basketball, and that little stutter Doug Baldwin does—that is a basketball move. I don't know why more trainers don't do that in all the other teams. There's a guy at the downtown Tacoma YMCA. His name's Kyle. He does that move on me all the time, and then he scores, and I can't stop him. Man, boom. And Doug Baldwin, it seems like more wide receivers would train on that. Man, he's good at that, John.
He really is, no doubt. I agree. And I mean, and he said just a professional guy as far as just finding ways to get open and be in a position to give Russell Wilson a good look and a good throw. That's why, you know, his numbers, Russell's, are so much better when he's in than when he's out. Fortunately, except for this year, he's mostly been in.
Well, you know, I know that. I think, in my opinion, the guys, they all got to say what they got to say. This ain't no regular time, man. Not just another game. No way, baby. Man, it is going to be on here in the Evergreen State, and I can't wait for the game. Thanks a lot, John.
All right, we thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Charlie in Woodinville. Hey, Charlie.
How are you, Clayton?
I'm doing well. Morning.
So I'm going back a little bit, all pumped up about the Seahawks and whatnot, but back to something that you and Jet were discussing with the offensive linemen and whatnot, and it kind of solidified a thought that I've had for a while. I've got a lot of experience with youth football, and that the offensive linemen are typically the least athletic guys, and they're being asked to go up against, you know, often, particularly on the edge, you know, quite athletic guys. And pass blocking is a disadvantage for the offensive. But run blocking, when they're attacking them, is then tips the scales a little bit back to the least less athletic person's favor. So that may be why these run games are doing a little bit better than some of the pass games in the long run. Just a thought.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the problem that's current is that the offensive line coming out of college are not prepared for the pros. You know, they don't put their hand on the ground, which is what you do in the NFL.
Right.
You know, they basically kind of stand up there like five penguins just trying to pass block. And so they don't have the full ability to run block, you know, in the normal way that you do in the NFL. And so it takes them more time and you have more failures with that. And so it's harder to put offensive lines together. That's why, at least in the case of Mike Solari, I mean, he has a system that he is able to use in the sense that he wants big physical guys. He wants to win that battle first and then start to work the play action passes after that. And, you know, the system works. There's no question.
All right. Excellent. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Load up the phone lines. We go to the top of the hour, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Playoff edition here of the John Clayton Show. We go to Bill.
Hi, John.
Good, Bill. How are you?
Hey, doing great. Nice talking to you. Hey, I got a question. About 6 weeks ago, there was that Thursday night game between the Chiefs and the Rams.
Right.
Do you think Do you think that was the greatest or the second greatest game you've ever seen as far as going back and forth?
It's one of the best ones I've ever seen. I actually went down there because I wanted to catch, you know, when they moved the game out of Mexico City, it created the opportunity to have two games to catch. So I caught the Chargers in Denver and I caught that game. And it clearly was one of the best games I've ever seen because it was just, you know, it was playoff intensive. It was big plays. It was, you know, coming back and all that. It was just fantastic to be able to see. And, you know, it's funny because at that point, everybody thought everything's so out of whack with this league, with the offense and the defense not being able to handle any of the offense. And then since that game, you know, the defense have been able to somewhat contain some of these high-powered offenses.
Right, yeah. I'm jealous that you were there and I wasn't there. Hey, but the only game I saw in my whole lifetime that compared was back in about 1982, Miami Dolphins against Bum Phillips Houston Oilers. They had a game that went back and forth, and Earl Campbell was running over people. It was an amazing game.
Yeah, it kind of reminds you of like the Charger game against the Dolphins in the playoffs way back in the 70s with Don Coryell. But one playoff game in, I think, Kansas City and Indianapolis. Remember, that was a game where I don't think either team had a punter go on the field because it was so much scoring in that one. But it was a classic game. And again, you catch one of those and you go, wow. You just say, this was special.
Right. And just two quick things. Hey, I'm predicting, I'm picking the Chargers over the Ravens.
I would agree.
Yeah. And then I wanted to mention, I thought the Rams were actually hurt near the end of the season, losing Cooper Kupp, because that slot receiver position was so important for them. He gave them a lot of opportunity to throw the ball inside or outside. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, in fact, what ended up happening is that after Kupp went down for the season, it basically gave the defenses a chance to, you know, because now you have, you don't worry about Josh Reynolds. I mean, Josh Reynolds can catch, as he did, I think, one game, more than 10 balls, but it's not going to kill you. So now you put a double on either Brandon Cooks or you put him on Robert Woods, and then you find a way to neutralize, you know, Gurley in some fashion. So you put an extra guy on him. And so if you get those two commitments, now you only have to worry maybe about Cooks or Woods. And, you know, it's not like you're going to totally stop Todd Gurley, but if you can control him a little bit better, it takes away from that offense because it gets into that system.
Yeah, that's good. I'll let you go, John. I just wanted to, hey, I think Cooper Kupp, though, has got a great future in this league. He comes back.
Oh, I agree.
He is just improving all the time. Awesome player.
No, he's a good one. So, hey, thank you for the phone call. All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
I'm doing great because it's always good to be on the air with the professor during football season, especially a wild card weekend with the Hawks about to deal. John Clayton, we've talked hundreds of times over the past 15 years, but this is the first time this year, so happy New Year to you and Mrs. Clayton and everyone out in Clayton land.
Well, thank you, and happy New Year to you.
Thank you, sir. And when you talk about New Year's, John Clayton, as an impartial football writer, you will never know the combination of elation and depression when at the stroke of midnight, you're yelling Happy New Year, and 18 hours later, you're screaming, what the hell happened to the Huskies? So let me give a shout out to the memory, I'm telling you, of Jimi Hendrix for...
How long do you think it's going to take for them to get that significant win?
Next season.
Yeah. So you're in the same boat as I am. I think, you know, as great as it was with Jake Browning, it's going to be that much better with Jacob Eason.
I think so. Yeah, no question about it. What was your take on the Rose Bowl and both the Dogs and the Ohio players, Buckeyes?
Ohio State was the better team. I think that's the biggest take. And, you know, a better team and a better quarterback. And, you know, because now what you're looking at with Jake is that I don't know, I kind of doubt if Jake's going to get drafted. And you can see that the Ohio State quarterback's probably going to be a first-round pick and maybe the first quarterback taken in this draft. He's better than I thought. And so that, of course, gave them the ability to, you know, get the big lead. And it was a matter of, it was just not enough time to be able to come back. I think that you still see some, you know, the limitations, I think, in some of the pass rush. That needs to get better. And I think what you can see next year is that I think they'll be better on offense and maybe take a little bit of step back on defense. But, again, Peterson continues to get good recruiting classes, and that bodes well for the future.
Yeah, I think so. You're absolutely right. It's just to put a purple bow on the Husky season, John Clayton, it started and ended the way all Husky seasons should. Playing a big-time opponent in the opener and playing in the Rose Bowl at the end. And the bottom line, John Clayton, is at the end of the 2018 season, 10 seasons after going 0-12, the Huskies were back in the granddaddy of them all. And from granddaddies to godfathers, John Clayton, there is no voice more recognizable nor more iconic than that of the godfather of Seattle sports talk, the Gross. And yesterday, when he wrote he was returning to the airways of 710, I immediately heard Thin Lizzy singing "The Boys Are Back in Town" because that's how Graz's Facebook post sounded as I was reading it. Great to hear you back on John Clayton's show, Graz. And talking about the boys being back in town, John Clayton, the Seahawks are back in the playoffs in the town of the Cowboys with an opportunity to extend one of the best seasons of Seahawk football I've seen. When you start the season 0-12 and then play some of the grittiest Hawk football ever by getting their talents out and clawing their way to 500 and then pulling, you know, win after win and getting up to double digits, it's pretty encouraging that they're going to make some noise in the playoffs. And part of that gritty football is the way they've run the ball, the pass protection stiffening up, and Russell Wilson pulling more rabbits out of his magic hat than rhinos. The other part, John Clayton, and perhaps the most gritty, is the defense, which at the beginning of the season, everyone was looking for a new name for. And as far as I'm concerned, we can call them the Gumbies. I know it doesn't have the same ominous ring as the Legion of Boom, but it's the most fitting for the type of bend-but-don't-break defense the Seahawks have played most of the season, both in the red zone and particularly at the goal line. And anyone who's ever had a Gumby knows you could bend that guy every which way you wanted to, but he would never break, and that's the type of Seahawks defense which is imperative today for them to get a big win in Big D. For the rest of the field, put me down for the Texans, the Chargers, and the Eagles. And lastly, John Clayton, let me give a shout-out to the memory and legacy of Siggy Smith. And additionally, it's hard to believe that Mike Conn left us 10 years ago. Go Seahawks. Talk and roll. Safe travel to you, John Clayton.
Hey, thank you, Commando Dave. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Bob in Bothell. Hey, Bob.
Hey, John, Happy New Year's. Thanks for taking
Happy New
call.
Year to you.
All right. I just got a couple of questions for you, and I love your perspective on this. One, what would you think? Do you remember when Dallas traded Herschel Walker?
Yeah.
And they got all the other players. What if Seattle did that to Russell Wilson, traded him?
It'd be the stupidest thing. It'd be the stupidest thing this town has ever done.
Really? And try to get, like, an offensive line, some defensive line, and get rid of
the You're the Miami Dolphins. You're the
terrible.
Yeah, that's like all you can hope for is to be a 6-8 win team. A quarterback like Russell Wilson is going to win you 4 or 5 games.
Yeah, I see that.
If you don't have the quarterback, I mean, you know, go through. I mean, like for example, the debate in Detroit about what do you do with Matthew Stafford? I mean, he's a very talented quarterback, but I mean, what's he won? Nothing.
Nothing. Okay, my other
So it's like, yeah, you can get all these players. You can trade Russell Wilson.
Sure.
But what you're looking, because remember, it's like they made that trade, but they had Troy Aikman.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, bingo. That's the part that I forgot. They already had the key quarterback. All right,
my second
question. Do you think Chris Peterson as the UW coach has been a failure for bowl games since he's 1-4? I mean, he hasn't won a big bowl game yet. I looked at stats for Boise State, and it's much better than what he's been doing for here.
Yeah, but of course he's getting in bigger bowl games here than he is at Boise State, because you know it comes down to, and I know there's this talk that's been chattered the way it's going right now, and it shows how outdated the 4 playoff system is, and maybe the 85 scholarships, because you basically have the same teams. You know, I mean, every year you got 4 or 5 teams that are going to be the same competing for those spots, and now the Huskies are in that mix, but then you have to go against Clemson, you have to go against Alabama, you have to go against Ohio State, Oklahoma. I mean, those are the teams you have to face.
That was my third question. What if the college, you know, NCAA said, you know what, we're going to make eligibility for Alabama and Clemson a little bit harder because it's only a 2.5 GPA to get into Alabama. And do you think that would cause an uproar, or do you think it would even out?
I think it'd be unfair. I think what's unfair about it, it's bad enough for the college students and the college players right now to not be able to collect on, some of the social media stuff and some of the, you know, things that they can make some money off of. I mean, it's bad enough for that. But now if you're going to restrict the number of scholarships because you want to put that in there, that would be wrong. I mean, the one debate is, and I think I don't know if this is the right solution or not, they're thinking the 85 scholarship limit should be taken down to 70, which, of course, that's tough because now you're getting less players getting even scholarships. Because right now it's like Clemson's played Alabama 3 straight years. There's very little turnover, and the SEC is so dominant.
Yeah, you're true. I can't debate about that. Fourth question, Seahawks question. Is it Rich Moore or David Moore for the receiver?
David Moore.
David Moore. Do you think he's been a bust?
No, he's a good player.
I mean, you know, it's just like I've watched a couple of games, a few drops, you know.
I haven't seen the drops.
See, my gym teacher was Sherman Smith in junior high. And he
was my next door neighbor. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I told you that. And he always taught us the old saying, what Steve Largent said: if you can touch the ball, you better damn catch it. Because that was Steve Largent telling the rookie receivers coming in: if I can touch that ball, I'm catching it. And he wasn't even wearing those special gloves back in the day. And I watch Mr. Moore, and I love the guy. He's big, he's strong, and man, he drops those balls, and I don't want to.
Well, this team has fewer drops than any team in the league, and I honestly can't recall many drops.
I can't remember the games. I'm not good at placing a game like that. But
yeah.
I just swear it's. So you're saying that? Okay, my last question for you is this: since we got Pete Carroll wrapped up till I say 2021, right?
Right.
Do you think his main goal will be to fix the defensive line? We got Frank Clark, who's a stud, but to help him out so we don't wear him out.
Think about this in the big picture. Okay, so you would agree. I mean, Frank Clark had 14 sacks. He's a Pro Bowl defensive end. All right. Would you say that Jaron Reed at 10.5 sacks is a Pro Bowl defensive tackle?
I would.
Bobby Wagner is a Pro Bowl middle linebacker. We don't know if KJ Wright's going to be back. McDougal's a Pro Bowl caliber safety. Maybe one of the two. Maybe more Trey Flowers is a Pro Bowl caliber cornerback. If you put one defensive end that can be Pro Bowl caliber in that mix, think about that. You have three Pro Bowlers on the defensive line. You got Wagner. You've got two guys possibly in the secondary. Now you're talking about a defense that's going to be top 10, top five.
Oh, yeah. And thing about Commando Dave, I was laughing when he said the Gumby. It just reminds me too much of Saturday Night Live. So I think a better nickname that I think one of the Hawks came up with, what I would prefer, would be the Dirty 30, three place.
Uh-huh.
The Legion of Boom, because Gumby makes it sound like they're just going to chew on us to death. I know it's comedy, but still, hey, you're a legend on the radio, and it's awesome to have you back. Thank you for taking
the call. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Another great show.
Well, thank you.
Hey, a couple quick things. I just want to wish you a healthy, wealthy, and happy new year for you and your wife. And I understand how it is taking care of the wife, but be strong in any series this coming up week.
Right now, no. Don't know if I'm going to get that last minute call. I guess a lot of it depends on, Jim Miller's schedule with the Bears, because, if the Bears, they're going to be playing. So there's an outside chance, but right now, nothing scheduled.
Okay. And what's your thoughts on, which way Denver needs to go? I think defensive coach, because they got Kubiak that wants to be, still involved in the offense, correct?
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, it wouldn't surprise me, because, I mean, they can also go for Mike Munchak. That could also solve some problems, because I think that they're not married to hiring an offensive play caller because they have Gary Kubiak there. So that gives them some flexibility. So does that take them? And I think that more than anything else, after the Vance Joseph experience, they need to hire somebody with head coaching experience. And so it could be a head coach on defense. It could be it could be Adam Gase or whatever. But I think that it's got to be something. And I think there can be a pretty good relationship with Kubiak and Munchak. And so I think Munchak has a decent chance at the job. Maybe Jim Caldwell has a decent chance at the job. If I was making a pick right now, I think the odds favor that it might be Munchak.
Okay, and then one other thing. You think there's going to be any fallout from what Von Miller's mother was doing on Instagram, or saying on Instagram, to what John Elway said?
I didn't see what she said. What was the reaction?
Elway gave the end of the year thing, saying that everyone needs to play harder, including Von. I'm paraphrasing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess she came back saying, well, you need to look at yourself and look at the quarterbacks. And then she started doing hashtag Jerry Jones call Denver for some type of trade. You're saying stuff like that.
Yeah. I don't think there's going to be any big fallout because, I mean, Vaughn's too good of a player and he means so much. I mean, here you're talking about a Hall of Fame caliber guy and, something like that. And hey, I mean, say what you want. Again, you know, I keep saying that I think he's, has been one of the best problem solvers in football. Well, he's not solved problems in the last couple of years. He's created more problems than he's.
Yeah, it's those quarterbacks. And then one last thing, John. Do you think, never mind.
Thank you for the phone call. All right, Victor. Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Brian in Arlington, Texas. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how are you? Hello.
Brian, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, Brian.
Yeah.
I can hear you.
I'm a Seahawks fan.
Yes.
Always have been.
from, oh, goodness, I guess back to Dave Craig and all them, you know. Anyway, I predict that the Seattle Seahawks will win tonight. I mean, there's obvious things. You got Russell Wilson, you got Pete Carroll, and you got the Cowboys that think just because they put that star in their helmet, they're entitled to be good players, and they don't have a good work ethic down here, I don't believe. Hello.
Tell me about the work ethic that might be a problem.
I think they're just entitled.
Yeah.
Brian,
I'm going to do one thing here, so just stay. Okay, Brian, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, very good. All right, so tell me a little bit more about the work ethic. Like, what might, is Jason Garrett not being as hard of a taskmaster? Because he is a down-to-business type of guy.
I think it's just a business thing between him and Jerry Jones. I don't think he's a good head coach at all, to be honest with you. I mean, it's been for years. I mean, it's been years that we've always asked ourselves down here, why aren't they gotten rid of him yet? You know, he can't get any disciplined players down here, you know. I mean, I think when they put that star in their helmet, they think they're entitled to be good automatically. There's no good work ethic, period. I just don't believe it, you know.
Well, I mean, you have to say that. I mean, the work ethic has been pretty good on defense.
It's been good.
I mean, you can see
it's
that Dez Bryant got away with a little bit. He probably didn't work as hard. But the big thing is, I mean, the pressure's on him to win. There's no question.
Oh yeah, I think they'll fire him. I think if he doesn't win tonight, if Jason Guerin doesn't win tonight, he's gone, or he should be.
Yeah,
you know.
Well,
let's put it this way.
I know the topic's going to be on the table. We talked about it earlier with Todd. We talked about it with Todd Archer and talked about Tim Kalishaw during the week. And so, yeah, he's definitely in trouble. Hey, good luck, Brian. Thank you for the phone call.
All right,
let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton, and I know we're on the clock. All I can say was that game drove me to ice cream and early bed.
I can imagine. Remember how fearful I was that something like that can happen? I mean, you're going up against the big guys.
You don't need to waste the time here and get into the semantics of it. All I know is this year the kids are all coming back. They're going to be great, if not better than ever, from that experience. And look out, playoffs again, Mr. Clayton.
We'll see.
You have a happy, happy new year, you and Mrs. Clayton, and we'll keep calling because I need to save your soul and convert you to the Irish.
Okay. Thank you so much, Irish Mankey, and thank you so much, everybody. Fun show today as we get ready for the playoff game between Seattle and the Dallas Cowboys. We'll be back with everything in a couple hours here. And, of course, I'll be back on Monday at 10. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.